and welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of PCDNF and Circuits Assembly. My guest today is Rick Hartley. For some 50 years, Rick has been an engineer and designer of printed circuit boards, primarily with BF Goodrich and L3A Avionics. He is now principal of RH Hartley Enterprises, where he consults with leading companies to resolve noise, signal integrity, and EMI problems. Perhaps the most popular speaker in the history of PCB West, Rick recently has been conducting two-day workshops on controlling signal noise. Welcome to PCB Chat, Rick.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be here. Great to speak with you.
Now, Rick, you've spent thousands of hours teaching engineers and designers. Are there certain issues that keep coming up?
Interesting question. Yes, as a matter of fact, there are. Things that I get feedback on most often are issues relating to EMI. People seem to have a good handle on signal integrity problems. And the reason, I believe, even though signal integrity and EMI problems are all caused by the same issue, that's the energy moving in the transmission lines not being contained or controlled properly. But we can see when energy bounces around or reflects or does something, cross couples between lines, we can see that easily by looking at the voltage and current in transmission lines. EMI issues, especially in particular radiated EMI, are issues that are much harder to see at the board level. Yes, we have near field probes and antenna that we can view the stuff with, but actually seeing the fields themselves can be a challenge to see their exact shape, where they reside, and so on. So what it really comes down to, in a nutshell, is because all the energy in a transmission event is in the fields, a lot of engineers think that it's in the voltage or current, when in fact it's really in the electric and the magnetic fields. And when we contain those properly in the transmission line, we don't have problems. When we fail to contain them properly, that's when issues start to crop up. And that's really what we're seeing a lot of. Just repeat events. People will come to a workshop or to a class at PCB West and say, you know, I'm seeing this or that issue. And a year later, they're still seeing the issue. And not necessarily that issue, but similar related issues. So that is really, to answer that first question, it really comes down to electromagnetic interference as being the issue that keeps popping up.
And when you started out as a designer, Rick, you know, how familiar were you with the term EMI, and you know, how did you go about learning about it?
That is an interesting question. The term EMI says everything you need to know. EMI stands for electromagnetic interference, which tells you in its title that we're dealing with an electric field and a magnetic field event. And yet, as a young engineer, I didn't really grasp that well. And unfortunately, many of the engineers I've dealt with over the years haven't always grasped that concept well. Again, people keep looking at voltage and current in circuits to try to figure out what's causing the problem, when in fact it really does come down to the electric and the magnetic field. But as a young engineer, I didn't really have a good handle on this sort of thing. It's the kind of thing that I learned over the years as I matured by making mistakes. I think the majority of what I know now came about from the mistakes I make. The beauty of failure is you get to learn by it.
And so when you started out, obviously EMI was part of the equation, but it probably wasn't the first and foremost thing on your mind, correct?
Well, that's absolutely correct. Yeah. When I first started in electronics, we didn't even have to pass electromagnetic interference testing. That actually didn't come about until the 1970s. EMI problems became so rampant in this. I remember in my home, for example, putting toast in the toaster and hearing it on the television. Those kinds of things, you know, that kind of interference was commonplace. You'd turn on one appliance and it would interfere with other appliances. And that was just what happened within people's homes. In factory settings and in electronic machine settings, the problem was much more pronounced. And so in the 70s, the governments around the world basically got together and said, you know, we need to put a stop to this. I remember the first time someone came into our engineering department, the company I worked for, and I think it was around 75 or 6, and said, you know, one of the things we have to do now is and is to pass EMI testing. And it could very well be that the laws existed before then, but we were not aware of them in the company I worked for and didn't do anything about it. But at that point, we did suddenly have to start passing these EMI tests, being able to put a unit into a testing environment where we looked at how much field energy it was giving off and how susceptible it was to induced field energy, how easily was it interfered with by outside fields coming in. These were tests that we hadn't worried about before then. So it was really at some point in the 70s that the problem became most pronounced.
And now pretty much every product designer has to think about EMI and controlling noise, correct?
Oh, absolutely. There are products that don't have to focus on that. For example, I've been told, now I've not worked in this industry, but I've been told that the downhole electronics that goes into oil well drilling, for example, doesn't have to focus on EMI issues because there's nothing to interfere with except themselves. So as long as their circuit functions okay, they're fine. But most people, you're absolutely right, most people today designing anything, whether it's automotive electronics, whether it's an appliance, a washer dryer, you know, a toaster. Back in the day when our toaster interfered with our television, it was just a pop, push-down, pop-up toaster with electric coils. Today, the toaster probably has a microcontroller in it. So that you can do everything except play music, and I bet some of them even do that.
So, you know, as I mentioned, you're probably the most popular speaker in the history of the PCB West Conference. You routinely draw, hundreds of folks each year to your various talks. I know you're a pretty humble guy, so you'd never brag about that. But let me ask you this. You know, as you've made a name for yourself over the years, did your employers ever wish that they could just keep you in house and maybe, you know, you weren't out there sharing everything you knew with all their competitors?
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I did hear that a couple of times over the years. In fact, more than a couple. One of the things I never did, I never shared anything proprietary. I made a vow to all my employers that I would keep proprietary stuff in-house because it certainly wasn't my position to talk about that. So some of the things that I had just learned on any given day or week or month, I would have to find ways to share it generically without telling people at all about the product that we learned this through. But yeah, one of the things I did when I took the job at L3 was I had worked for the same people before in a different company. And I made it clear to them when I took the job, I do teach and I do consult. And they knew that going in. And I said, when it's time to go to a conference or to go on the road to do a speaking engagement, I'm going. I might work, if I have to, I'll work overtime, but it's before and after to make up for if we're very busy and you know, it's a lot to do. I'll make up the time. But when I say it's time to go, I'm going. And you have to understand that going in. And you can't ever tell me that I can't go, because if you do that, then I'm walking out the door. And they were fine with that. The management said, sure, we understand. You know, we get that. Just the only thing they ask of me is don't share anything proprietary. I promised I never would and never did.
What do you think you enjoy most about teaching, Rick?
The reason I got into teaching was to share what I knew. It was probably 25 years ago or more, maybe 26, 7 years ago, that I really first started to understand noise and signal integrity issues, what causes them. And once I learned a little bit about it, I found through our IPC Designers Council locally that most of the people in our council didn't understand these issues. And so they asked me, you know, share this with us, tell us what you know. And I developed short classes, you know, half hour, hour, 2 hour classes to do at our meetings to share the knowledge with the people in our council. And I think I got a huge lift out of being able to help other people understand things that had taken me, frankly, a long time to get my arms around, because I had no one to teach me. Again, I learned by being stupid. And as I say, you learn from your mistakes. But I felt good being able to help others. I think that's the main reason I teach, is the opportunity to share what I've learned with other people.
Speaking of teaching, you retired from L3 recently, but it seems like your work schedule is even busier now than it was before you left.
Yeah, that's crazy. I really didn't expect that. When I was working at L3, as I mentioned, I told them that I both teach and consult, and they knew that. And I would occasionally get consulting jobs, but I think the fact that I was working full-time, a lot of people who may have otherwise contacted me didn't, because I was only available on a part-time basis. So most of the time outside of working at L3 that I spent consulting back in those days was time that I spent preparing classes and doing small jobs. When I retired, I thought, well, this is great. I can continue working at the same level I did, you know, doing consulting and teaching at the same level I did when I was working at L3. That'll give me, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 hours a week of time where I can sit in the office and prepare a class or, you know, analyze a circuit issue and see what's going on. But it hasn't worked out that way. I'm quite surprised, actually. I don't have a website. I don't advertise. I don't do anything. But yet somehow my name has gotten out there, and I get a lot of requests to do consulting to help resolve signal integrity problems as well as EMI problems, and to do classes, not just through the classes I do at PCB West and the PCB two-day classes we've been doing, but I get requests from companies to come to their facilities and talk to them about specific issues, and it's bloomed way beyond where I expected it to.
So, Rick, you know, now that you've had 50 years of experience to look back on your career, do you have any advice for designers, young or experienced?
Yeah, the thing that I wish most that I'd known when I graduated was, and I share this in the classes that I teach, what I wish I had most known was what causes interference issues. Exactly what causes it, not kind of, sort of what causes it, but exactly what creates the issue and how to prevent it, not how to band-aid it, not how to put a ferrite or two here or there to stop it, but prevent it from happening in the first place. I wish I had known that, and I can say now with clarity, it is all about the fields, and that's something I learned from a combination of two people, Ralph Morrison and Dan Beaker. Dan, I've known Dan Beaker for about 15 years, maybe a little less than that, but close to 15 years. And he introduced me to Ralph Morrison. And Ralph was really the guy who caused me to wrap my mind around the fact that all problems come down to lack of containment of fields. When we don't contain fields correctly, we will generally, the energy that's in those fields will spread and couple into other areas. It could be coupling in our own circuits. A crosstalk is a very simplified form of that. When traces that we route, or transmission lines, the correct way to say it, that we route, get too close to one another, they couple their field energy into one another. But there are many ways in which this happens, and it all comes down to not setting up the circuit board and the physical packaging correctly. And sadly enough, as the great Henry Ott once said, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember his quote, Mr. and Ms. Designer, circuit designer, and circuit board designer, you can do a perfect job, but the moment you populate a circuit board with ICs, all bets are off. And the sad reason is because it all comes down to the physical entity, the ICs themselves. Now, ICs are typically too small to resonate and radiate at the frequencies where we see EMI problems, but they will couple their energy into other elements of the circuit and the circuit board and create resonance and radiation among those features. So it's the ICs, the circuit board layout itself, how we stack the circuit board, how we route, how we place and the parts and route into and out of them. All of this stuff matters immensely. And every year that goes by, I find myself learning more and more about this and figuring out what I didn't know the year before. But anyway, to answer your question, I wish as a graduate individual in my early days, I'd had a better grasp of fields. In other words, I wish I'd stayed awake during electromagnetic field theory classes. Because the truth is, when they introduced Maxwell's equations, my eyes glassed over. And I'm sure I probably nodded off. I mean, this is stuff that when you first hear it as a young, you know, college student, it's a crashing bore. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's not a crashing bore. I found it very interesting, but it was deep enough and difficult enough to understand that I didn't, and I wish I had. The truth is, you don't have to have a deep understanding of Maxwell to understand how fields move, where they move, and how the energy is contained in the fields, so that you will then have a knowledge of how to set up the circuit board, how to do the layer stacking, how to route, how to do all these things so that fields don't expand and move to other places and cause problems. And that's what I really wish I had known back then.
Well, Rick, I want to thank you for your time. It's been great having this day to chat with you.
Thank you.
And I want to remind listeners that Rick Hartley will be speaking in Melbourne, Florida in January as part of the PCB Today workshops. Rick, thanks so much for coming on to PCB Chat.
Thank you, sir, very much for having me.
Thanks, and have a great day.